Now, Gary himself goes on to say, in speaking here of music, we are not talking about music, in quotes, the stuff where whatever the most popular form at the moment may be called, pop, rock, hip-hop, heavy metal, etc., that most persons nowadays pour into themselves through their earbuds, especially the young, and that derives from jazz. Yes, a tremendous difference exists between what artists like modern jazz quartet Jerry Mulligan and Dave Brubeck used to produce and what issues from, say, the videos of the late self-styled king of pop, Michael Jackson. Still, we might recall the point registered by Richard Weaver in Ideas Have Consequences. The very word jazz was originally African-American slang for copulation. The music fit the word because, unlike real music, it is all climax. Real, serious music will also reach a climax, an emotional high point, but whether composed by Mozart or late romantic like Sibelius, the approach to it will be measured, ordered, restrained. In a word, civilized. What most of today's kids listen to in their handhelds is the music of disorder and abandoned. Barbarism. None of it, absolutely none, will ever or can be described as magnificent or sublime, words which we reach for when speaking, for instance, of Bach's B minor mass. So I assume that you agree with that?
I do, and for whatever it's worth, for the kind of radio broadcast drama that you engage in so frequently, I can say for the benefit of your listeners that this was not pre-staged, but as it happens, I have a copy of Weaver's text in front of me. And the interesting thing with regard to Gary's reference to Sibelius and some of the composers whose era you most appreciate, Weaver starts his section on music. It's from the chapter called Egotism in Work and Art. Egotism as in, you know, obsession with one's self.
Yeah.
And he starts he has, you know, a section on painting, a section on the other arts. But when he comes to music, there's two things interesting that he says. One is that he quotes or alludes to the observation of Schopenhauer saying that music is a medium that is uniquely related to the will. So, as you know, Weaver was a bit of a Platonist. So there's this ongoing argument about the primacy of the will and the intellect. And that would take us, the clock is ticking, so that would take us very far afield. But interesting, because I think people who are moved by music, if they stop and think about it for a bit, there's a certain IV, if you forgive this crazy mixed metaphor, where the IV plugs directly to the will. Now, a will with no intellect is really just this amorphous center of power, right? It's not a thing in terms of human nature, but definitely there are some, to go back to Senior, you know, he's arguing theology, philosophy, et cetera, is certainly supreme in the order of the powers of the will, of the soul, but it's abstract. And the will is moved in different ways. And I think it's true. I think one has to admit that someone who's moved by music is moved more at the level of the will. But the motive power, if you will, depends upon what the intellectual content of the music is, and we can come back to that if that observation means anything. But I want to get in on the record the second sentence, and I'm trying to start a bit of a dust up just to make this interesting with you regarding your romantics.
Yeah, you're going to be dissing my music here.
Yeah, that's right. Weaver says, with regard to the story of music here. He says to his readers, we discover a decline which extends from the fugues of Bach to the cacophonous arrangements of modern jazz. So he's throwing out this hand grenade saying, in effect, after Bach, it's all downhill. And of course, no one who appreciates Brahms, Mozart, Haydn, Pergolesi, you know, you go down the list. I mean, that's, I think there's, I never met Dr. Weaver, obviously, but I'm thinking that there was a certain hyperbolic assertion for the sake of getting a conversation started there. I don't know what his personal taste in music may have been. But it's interesting because, again, this is, I'm going to engage in a bit of name dropping, just hoping that your interested listeners will follow these names as if they're little footnotes or food for thought, you know, going further. Jacques Barzun, I don't know if the name registers. I'm not a huge expert in his life or his career. To my knowledge, he's a man of letters, you know, very erudite, but not a model Catholic in terms of what you and I would consider a serious Catholic. Certainly not a Thomist or even a scholastic sympathizer like Weaver. His famous book, like the product of his life's work, is called From Dawn to Decadence, 500 Years of Literature in the West. And the basic thesis is that in and around 1500, you know, taking history in chunks of 500-year, you know, easy-to-digest blocks, the flowering of literature happens when the medieval order, not just political, but more to the point intellectual, starts to unravel. So you don't have this eruption of art in literature until humanity is back to wrestling with the meaning of life. Whereas, again, to take very round figures, let's say from 500 to 1500, after the church and the faith was liberated from its political oppression and kind of certainly started to rule the civilized world at that time, at least in the West, for that 1,000-year period, men and women in Europe and in the areas that were converted to the faith, we have the meaning of life. We're comfortable with it. We go about our business. We work by the sweat of our brow, provide food, shelter, clothing, etc. All basic necessities. It's the era of Gregorian chant, obviously, where music is literally just a means of meditating, a means of bringing down to earth, to come back to this notion of the senses. The sensible world is singing to us in our ears through music that we ourselves are producing of the glories of God and all his attributes, all his goodness. This is pointing now a little in the direction of the John Senior chapter that you made reference to earlier, brother, because he's talking about the essence of music really as just one of the many ways in which the human soul praises God. And of course, he asked the question, what else is there for the soul to do? Like, this is why we're on earth, and this is what we're destined for in eternity if we play our cards right, if you forgive a bit of flippancy. But to come back to Barzun, it's not until 1500 and after that you do have this flowering of the written word in terms of all of the great works of literature. And if you want, we can pursue a bit of the senior chapter on, you know, how in the English language we're stuck reading Protestants mostly, mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that the works are not, you know, profound and worthy of study. The same is true in music. If you think of music history, there's this from the era of chant, which again is, you know, almost 1,000 years or 700 years of construction, say from the third and fourth century until, you know, just into the second millennium, you know, the chants are being written, long scholarly historical debates about, you know, who wrote what and when and all that. It's really beside the point as far as I'm concerned. You have this whole body of chant worked on, developed early, it's refined, it exists. And the reality is, as some of our favorite composers, as the William Byrds and the Tomás Luis de Vitoria, Christopher Morales, of course, the great Palestrina, Orlando de la Sousse, all of these writers in polyphony, both sacred and secular music, are coming into their own and absolutely dominating Europe as the chief artists of Europe. I mean, these are men. If they're all in heaven, it's one of the other lesser noble reasons why I'd really like to make it, because I would like to see and maybe have a conversation with a few of these guys. as they are producing works that are, you know, extraordinary. As I said to you in one of our many side conversations we've had recently because of the music class, this has been an opportunity for me to go back to the books.